We are in Solvang, California, on May 7th, 1976, interviewing.
And would you please give us your name?
Arne M. Madsen.
And you have lived in Solvang for some time?
Since June 1928.
And your position in Solvang?
I was postmaster here for almost 32 years. I've been retired for 10 years.
Would you please tell us a little about your family, the ones that came from Denmark, as you remember it?
Yes, grandfather and grandmother on father's side came here, came to Kimmelton, Iowa in 1874 with six children, of which my father was the oldest at 11. And mother's family came here in the 80s, but I'm not certain of the year. Mother was only 13 when she came here, and neither one of them were fortunate enough to return or see Denmark again. Times were different at that time.
Do you know where they came from in Denmark?
Yes. Bedstefar, grandfather, was a ship's builder from Eriskøben, for Erie, and mother came from Lemby area.
We stopped for a moment to comment on the fact that when Ed and I walked to the front door, the first thing we noticed was the beautifully painted front door, and we said to each other at that time, this reminds us of Eriskøbing. And here we find someone whose grandparents came from Eriskøbing, and sure enough, the door reminds us of Eriskøbing. Will you please tell us about the other grandparents?
I cannot tell as much about them for some reason. They didn't live with us like we did on my father's side. My grandmother is buried in Elkhorn, Iowa. But grandfather on mother's side returned to Denmark, and in 1948 I found his grave or his tombstone in Lemby, but when we were there in 73 it had been removed. I can say that when I first knew about grandfather, what mother first told about him, they were operating quite a large dairy at the time at a little place near Elkhorn called Oerbeck. And when grandmother died, she was, I can't say it in American, she was running the creamery on the farm. And when she died, or when she got too sick to do the work, they gave it up, and the brothers were at Omaha, two or three of them, and mother and her sister also worked in Omaha for a while. But I don't know as much about their history as I do about grandfather on my dad's side, because we lived with them. Grandfather on my father's side died in 1914, and I was 15 years old at that time, so I remember that pretty distinctly.
Can you tell us a little about your grandfather?
Well, grandfather was a shipbuilder or a carpenter, ship's carpenter in Eriskøbing before coming here, and he built the neighbors' homes at Kimmelton as they arrived, or they came here, two of them together. Grandfather came with a friend that was a sailor, and he took off in San Francisco one day and took the railroad across the United States to New York, and he saw all this good land laying in Iowa for the taking, and he came home and he says to grandfather, that's where we have to go. And they all pulled stakes and came over, and I can't verify this, but it seems to me that they dug a hole in the hillside and lived there while grandfather built the home. And I remember him telling about the hardships that they had. For instance, there was no bridges when he was across the little creek there one day, building for our neighbors, or his neighbor. A big rainstorm came up, and the creek filled up and flooded to the extent that he couldn't cross. But he had a rope across from tree to tree in a little wooden box that he got into, and he pulled himself across the rope, with the rope. That day, the children were all down there waiting for him to come over, and the current was so strong that it took him. He lost the grip on the rope, and he floated down the creek for a couple of miles till he finally stranded on the opposite side in a tree and hung on. And I don't remember just how they all got him across, but he came back home safe and sound.
How big a family did your grandfather bring across?
They were him and his wife and six children, of which my father was the oldest, 11. Two of them died later, and only the four of them lived. I don't remember the ones that died, of course. They were before my dad was even married. But the four of them are all buried here in Suwon on the same plot.
Do you have any idea as to what they might have brought with them? Did you ever see things that they said, this is what we brought from Denmark?
I really don't. I can hardly remember my grandmother and grandfather's side, but I do remember the home down there. Well, we lived a little bit on the hill, and the grandparents' home, the old home, the original home, was probably something like a block from my dad's home. And I remember my brother and I going down there. We were probably 4, 5 years old, 6 years old. And the biggest treat was, of course, to come down there and look at Grandmother Sears' Roebuck catalog. And then we would get a cookie.
Now, your own mother and father, did they hold on to any of the Scandinavian customs in your home?
Definitely. I couldn't speak English when I started to go to school at 7 years old. No, they were very devout and loved Denmark to the last. And it was uppermost in their mind all as long as they lived.
Did they become citizens of the United States?
Yes, they did. And that was another peculiar way. Grandfather took out citizenship, and then the family automatically became citizens by that. But it was done in this peculiar way. The railroads, they owned most of the land around, or at least a good slice of it on each side of the railroad. And they came and begged Grandfather that they would give him citizenship if he would vote for a certain guy. And that's how he got a citizenship. There was no contest. He just walked in and got it if he just said, I'll vote for this guy.
When this 11-year-old boy came to this country, did he then go to an American school?
Did he or did I?
No, did he go to
school? He went to Drake University in Des Moines one time, I know about, but that was after he was quite a grown young man, so he didn't really get much of an American education either.
And what was your father's job? Was it a farmer?
Yeah, Dad was the farmer, yes.
And did your mother ever hold a job aside from being a mother and a wife?
Well, she did on the farm on the dairy, but she married young, I guess. Her mother was 20, I think, when she married Dad. And after that, of course, she had a job with us 5 children as we came along. 6 of us, one died in birth.
Did your parents belong to a Danish church? And if they did, would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, they certainly did. And they were instrumental. And my grandmother especially was instrumental in getting the first minister to Kimbleton, or to Elkhorn, rather, I'm sorry, after the parting of the Danish church. They branched out to 2 churches, the Indermission and the Gundby Church. And father and mother and that side of the family were all very influential in establishing and maintaining. I just read a brochure the other day where I saw where father was the first president of the church for the 3 years or so after it was established in Kimbleton, Iowa.
Did you ever attend any Danish schools?
I mean
American Danish schools.
Yes, they were the only ones I did attend, because we attended Berner School. As we were children, we had 2 to 3 months of Danish school in the summertime, church school. That was private, of course. That was a church, but they hired teachers, and we had our confirmation classes also in Danish. And then I have been at NYSTA, Nebraska for 1 winter, and I was at Grandview College for 1 winter. That's the extent of my education.
As the Danish influence. Do you remember if your parents took any Danish magazines or newspapers?
Oh, yes, they did. Mother was very anxious to have us learn the Danish and retain it, so she sent to Copenhagen for a Danish child's magazine that was called Børneven, Udgivet Harup's Forlag. And she read Danish books to us, and she taught us to play a little Danish home talent plays when we were just 7, 8, 9 years old with our neighbors and so forth. Mother maintained the Danish to the best of her ability.
At Christmas time, did you have Christmas Eve as far as celebrating Christmas, or was it Americanized? Or?
No, it was definitely Danish. It was always Christmas Eve, and at that time we were not allowed to see the Christmas tree until after the dinner and the dishes were washed. And if we didn't help wash the dishes, we didn't get to the Christmas tree. But it was always such a revelation, of course. Dad would light the lights while the rest of us washed the dishes, and when it was done, he would open the door. It was then the first time I remember it was upstairs in one of the bedrooms, and I would walk in and see this glorious tree and lost our breath more or less. But we celebrated Christmas, I think, in a real good old Danish fashion, was walking around a Christmas tree, joining hands and singing songs, Christmas songs, and had our presents and so forth, as I understand they do in Denmark.
Did your grandparents speak any English when they came?
No, I'm sure they did not. I never heard them speak an English word. I don't believe they spoke English at all.
And your mother?
My mother didn't speak very much. For many years, when we moved to California here in 1927, they came out in 27. So I had a sister, I had two sisters that married non-Danish, and she lived with my sister when she died, and by that time she was doing fairly well.
Mr. Madsen, would you tell us how you met your wife?
Yes, I will, and I will tell you how I first knew about her, because I read in a Danish paper in Iowa about 1926. She was in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and working as a nurse at Satoria Hospital. And she knew my cousin there and the Holtz that used to Isha Danneberg. And it came out in that paper one day that she'd had an appendectomy, and it was quite sick and lonesome from Denmark and all this and that, and I kind of had a little sympathy for her then, but I hadn't met her till we come to California. I was in Iowa, in Cedar Falls, Iowa. I was in the trucking business for a while, and I moved my uncle, my father's brother, from Kimmelton to Cedar Falls in this truck. And she was real close to my uncle, my cousin Alma, but I didn't meet her down there in Cedar Falls. When I came to California in June for the dedication of the church, it was the first time I attended anything public in so long, and my mother had fallen for her and was so anxious to introduce me to her. So
and what is your wife's name?
My mother's name was Sa, but Greta we called her. I think she was baptized Anna McGreta Tuesday from Esbjerg. But she goes for short. Now she's officially a citizen as Margaret T. Madsen.
Do you know, we will explain right here that Mrs. Madsen has not been as well, and we're going to let her husband speak for her. Do you know where she came from in Denmark, Mr. Madsen?
Yes, indeed I do. She came from Esbjerg, and I have visited there 9 times.
Do you know why, about how old she was and why she came to the United States?
Yes, she came over with a Reverend Holger Stansko, brought her along over. He had a greeting to an old man at the hospital in Esbjerg where Mrs. Madsen was working at the time as a nurse. And so it turned out that she was going to join them, and she was going to go to Minneapolis in Minnesota. For some reason, she didn't have anyone to go to. But she came with Holger Stansko, and they came to Cedar Falls, and that's where she stranded. And she was there then until she had this appendectomy, and she had a nervous breakdown with it, and the doctor recommended she took some time out, and she hadn't seen California, so she would like to go out here. She worked at the Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara for a little while after she recovered her health, and met a little girl there that she took care of, and there's wealthy people, and it's an interesting story. They asked her to come home and be a private nurse to this little girl until she recovered, and she ended up being there 3 or 4 years. And incidentally, that was our home when we first married, too, up in Mission Canyon in Santa Barbara. They insisted that I live with them, and Mr. Spaulding was a gracious person, and he took her father's place and gave her away for the wedding.
How lovely. Were you married in the Danish church?
Yes, ma'am. We were married here in Solbakken in the Danish church on October 12, 1929.
And you have a family?
We have 2 boys only, and the oldest one will be 40 in June, and he has been a pilot for TWA for the last 10 years. He's a fighter pilot in Germany for 4.5 years. And our youngest son, Ed, is an electronic engineer in Goleta, and he's a bachelor at the moment. He has been married.
What is your oldest son's name?
That's Vernon Vanden, and the youngest one is Edward.
Do you feel that your children are retaining some of the Danish culture?
It's a hard question to answer. They are very fond of Denmark, and my oldest son is intending to go there this summer with his family. and it's an interesting aspect of it. We were talking a little while ago privately about background and so forth. And Vernon is married to an Italian, a girl of Italian background, and she's a Catholic and he's not. But they have a very good relation, a beautiful home, and a couple of real beautiful children, well brought up. So we can't deny that there can be a relation without being the same background.
You have told us that your son was a fighter pilot during the war, and you've also told us that he went to Denmark. Would you tell us a little bit about how the family ended up in Denmark at that time?
Yes, I thought it was quite interesting. It was hard to get away from the post office at Christmas time, of course, but we did manage to arrange our things. We left here, I think, on the 22nd of January, and I had written a letter to the family that we would arrive. We had discussed whether or not we would, but I wrote an airmail letter on December the 11th that we were definitely coming, which they didn't get till 6 days after we left. So they were rather puzzled when we came there. And it so happened that our son Vernon was a pilot in Germany at the time, knew we were coming, and he had driven up from near Luxembourg, and he had picked up his cousin in Frankfurt, that she came from France. And they arrived, Esbjerg, 5 minutes before we called from the railway station that we were there. And when he arrived, his aunt, who is right here today, says, "Well, he asked, hasn't the folks showed up yet, mother and dad?" And she says, "No, are they coming?" "Well, sure they're coming." And 5 minutes later, we called from the station, we were there.
Did you find when you went to Denmark that it was as you had thought it would be?
It did in 1931. I was overwhelmed with emotions, frankly. I'll never forget sailing down Øresundskyst and seeing all the familiar places that mother had told us about, that we had read about, that we sang about. I was as emotional as I could be. And I enjoyed that summer so terribly much in Denmark, or so very much. And I've been there. I didn't get there again until 48, 60, 63, 66, 68, 71, 73. And every time, I'm sorry to say, I feel that there has been a change similar to what we have observed here. It seems to me there's a different character all over the world, I suppose. But I've always enjoyed Denmark.
Would you tell us how you came to be postmaster?
Yes, it's a kind of a strange story in a way. When we lived in Santa Barbara, we were in Denmark in 1931, and we came back, and we needed a job again, and we were both hired at a private girls' school in Santa Barbara for some very wealthy girls. My wife was a private nurse, and I was the chauffeur and the handyman. And while there, I suffered this stroke, and I was out for quite a while, out of work. And my friends up here came to me then in 1933, I guess it was, and asked me if I would accept the postmaster job here. Franklin Roosevelt was elected, and it happened to be my party, and that time you had to belong to the party that was in power in order to get the post office. So I said, "Well, certainly I'd be happy to, but I didn't think that I could handle it. I was practically on crutches." But the machinery was put into motion, and a long story. And make it short, I won out of six that applied and got started. It was an interesting situation. I was working for a friend of mine. I had a little grocery store. I worked for him with my one hand, and 4 o'clock one afternoon, I got a letter from Postmaster General Farley that I was to take over the next morning at 9 o'clock. And there was no inspectors and no nothing. I didn't know beans about it. But the former postmistress, Mrs. Hornsheeler, whose husband was the first postmaster and saw me, and so in that respect, I was really the second one in Solvang.
How big was Solvang at that time?
We were about 300 people.
And were they mostly of Danish descent?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So you saw a lot of mail coming and going to and from Denmark?
Oh, yes. We had a lot of trouble, too, with all the Jensens and Petersons and so forth, because we didn't have addresses in those days, so you had to know them. But you could always tell where they came from in Minnesota or Iowa, then you know where they belong.
In other words, instead of the address, you looked at the postmark and knew which...
That's right. If they came from Oscar, Minnesota, we knew it was this Jensen or that Peterson, or vice versa. Well, I could say first that I was here for 3 months in 1923 and worked as a young man on a rock crusher down here at the river when we paved the roads between Solvang and San Ynez and Los Olivos. And for the winter months in Iowa, we're not so much needed, so I was out here for 3 months and went back to Iowa again on March 1st to do the farming, as usual. And then in to make the longer story short, Dad was interested, of course, in Solvang because it was Uncle Geyerson that was one of the founders, so he bought land here in 1912 with his feeling that with the Panama Canal opening, it would create a future for California. And I have certainly admitted many times how true that was. But at any rate, I returned to Iowa then, and then in February 1927, our home burned down on a farm one day, and we were helpless to stop it. We didn't have any water pressure, and there was no fire department or anything in the area, so it went down in 30 minutes. And then Dad decided that maybe we should all go to California and see what we could do with the farm out here, because it was being rented and wasn't paying taxes and interest on the money. So we came out piecemeal. Dad came out that spring in 27. My brother was already out here, had come out in 24, and he passed away in 54 from a heart attack. And then mother came out, and my sister came out, and my brother came out. I stayed back at work for the man that rented the farm we had for a year, and then I came out in 28, and I was the last one to come. And we tried to do the farming. Dad thought we should have sheep. He thought this was an ideal country for sheep, so he sent my brother and I over to Bakersfield to buy sheep. We didn't know anything about it. Bought, I think, 400 head of three carloads of sheep, ewes, were supposed to lamb, and they did lamb, but the ones the coyotes didn't get, well, they died. So we had a disaster on that. We turned to dairying, and started a dairy, and two of us milked 60 cows by hand to begin with. Finally got a machine. Then the depression came on, and the butterfat went down. Everything was on a quota, and what they couldn't use, we didn't get anything for. They set the price way down to where it was a loss every day, and we finally had to give it up. And eventually, the post office came along for me, and the family moved elsewhere, Los Angeles and so forth.
What was Solvang like when you came here?
That's right. I got into 23, and of course it was about as it was in 28. There hadn't been much difference. I started in the post office in 32 with 100 mailboxes, and we estimated something like 300 people in Solvang, and you could practically speak Danish on the street all the time. And then, of course, it stayed that way until the war, and then all the boys that served in the war over at Camp Cook here at Lompoc, it was Camp Cook, it's Camp Vandenberg now, they all, like California, so back from all over the states, that they wanted to come back. And that started the tourism here. It started a few shops in Solvang, and from there on, the ball was rolling. And it wasn't exactly what us old-timers were like so terribly much. We liked the peace and tranquility of what we had, and all this tourist influx didn't really fit into that. But it has been a tremendous bread-and-butter situation for the community. Well, where did we end?
About how many mailboxes were there then when you left the post office?
Well, when I left the post office, we had a good 800 mailboxes, but I'd also at that time established two city delivery routes and a rural route in addition. So we grew from 100 mailboxes to 200 boxes plus two city delivery routes and a rural delivery route.
That's tremendous.
I can relate. Interestingly, to the receipts of the first year in 34, our receipts were based on stamp sales and money order fees. And we came out $2,800 the first year I was in there. And we ended up close to $99,000 when I left. the postage stamp was 1 cent when I came in for local mail and 2 cents out of town. And then depression came along and inflation started in a little bit, and they raised the postage to 3 cents. So then they reduced our salary. My salary was $115 a month. then they reduced me 15% because they figured the 3-cent stamp would increase the revenue, and that was the basis of our salary. So when the revenue went up, they reduced our salary.
Solvang has a lot of people here who are not Danish anymore, but those of you who are, so to speak, the old-timers, what do you do that is still as the old days?
Frankly, not too much. We have our own little cliques, you might call it, our close friends that we get together for birthdays and whatever, and have our type of... We do not, like we did in the real early days, we'd get together once a week, for instance, in the Depression, because we were all broke as church rats, you say, and couldn't do anything. We didn't have any place to go and no money to do anything with, so we got together once a week and had a cup of coffee and a sandwich, and then we would sing for a couple hours and have a lot of good times. Really worthwhile living, we feel now. We look back on it as the highlights of our lives.
And now you still keep the Song Fest once a month?
Yes, we do, not particularly with our close friends. It's more like us older people that's still... I can relate a line that I intend to use for the Queen's reception, that I talk a little bit about how what has been Danish and Solvang and how much it had lasted. And I mentioned that I believe that those of us that were born and raised here around the century will readily admit that the values of our heritage still run deep in the blood of our veins. This is a quotation I tend to use, and I think that's the truth. That I know my age group still adhere very much to what we feel are qualities of our heritage.
Now, you will be the main speaker in talking to the Queen, or greeting the Danish Queen.
I don't know whether I can say I'll be the main speaker. I've been asked to give the address of welcome, and I suppose in some way that is going to be the main address.
I don't think Mr. Madsen would say so himself, but he has been knighted, and I don't know if we can get him to say if there was something special at that time that this happened.
I kind of wish I knew what caused it. It took me so by surprise that I can't believe it. For a number of years, we were always invited down to the Consul General in Los Angeles to celebrate the King's birthday on March 11th. And this one year, 1966, when we came down there, I had no idea what was going to happen until 2 minutes before they asked me to stand out from the crowd. And the Consul General stood me up in the living room, and Lars Melker stood up next to me, and they presented me this citation. I could have gone through the floor. I had no idea, and I still don't know why.
But you're pleased.
I'm not unhappy.
You also have a brother knight here.
I have indeed. Now, Reverend Enoch Mortensen has been knighted, but he has just moved to town, but I've known him since 1920. And my cousin Albert in Santa Barbara was knighted. And I learned yesterday that two more were going to be knighted next week in this community. But I can't verify that at the moment.
You mentioned off the tape that you had been at Grandview College for the winter term.
Yeah, I was there for the winter term, 19, 20, and 21.
Would you just reminisce a little bit on those two winter terms?
I don't know what I can say about it, except that they stand out as some of the highlights of my lifetime. A period of time that I enjoyed very much and met a lot of friends that I've kept through the years, and got to have a strong feeling for the Grundtvig folk school atmosphere, I think has been maybe the quality that has kept me closest to Denmark.
And some of the young men who were there at Grandview are also here in Solvang now.
Yes, indeed there are. There's one, first of all,